Welcome to Unstacking the Data Tower, the bonus series from Unbooking the Territory, where we're following Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks on their road to Wembley 1981, one of the most watched wrestling matches of all time, and 80 million people watched the clash between Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks. This week, we're in the build up to the Cup Final 1978 show. There's no surviving matches, but we're going to have a lot of fun on the way getting there.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me.
At the Wembley Arena, we will be seeing Giant Haystacks versus Big Daddy. What will you be doing to Big Daddy?
Well, Kent, I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do to him. I'm going to show you what I'm going to do to him.
The time has come. No tag matches. When Haystacks and Daddy clash on the mat. And the
We are indeed. We are indeed. I'm looking forward to continuing my education, and we've got a few little bits and pieces planned, and we've got a very special guest this week. We've got Tackback joining us. How are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. I'm very special. I appreciate that. Don't get called that very often, or at least not in that context.
Well, you'd mentioned before about wanting to watch some World of Sport with us, so I don't know if you've stepped forward or everyone else has stepped back, but you're going to be here with us for the next couple of episodes.
Yeah, bring it on.
You've either drawn the long straw or the short straw. Time will tell which.
Yeah, but how's everyone been this week?
Yeah, pretty good. Well, in pretty good, I mean, stressed to high heaven, trying to run a pub in the run-up to Christmas with not enough staff. But, you know, chaos ensues and keeps me on my toes, I suppose.
It does indeed. I can't imagine working hospitality at this time of year. It was bad enough working retail. So, good luck to you, mate. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I need it.
Yeah. I'm all right myself. A little bit fragile. Time recording was at True Grit last night, the final show of the year for them. And it was very bloody good. Enjoying myself. Had a few ales. And as we all know, I'm the half of the podcast that does get hangovers. It's not as simple as just not believing in them, Rob. But I shall persevere. I'm seeing if a couple of adult beverages will bring me round.
Well, maybe, but I think if you just channel positive thinking, definitely won't get them, and positive thinking might come on later in the show. So yesterday we had a bit of a mad rush on because Beth managed to crack one of her teeth, so we ended up having to go to an emergency dentist in Sheffield, and I had to go and sit in a pub while she was at the dentist, which was awful, and I am very excited because, you know, stones that you get, like, you know, on electric tap or at the supermarket, the original brewery got taken over by Coors, and it's a bit shit. True North Brewing have got the original recipe and have brought back proper stones.
Oh, that very nice.
Be happy. Yeah.
You can't be that. It counts as a new check-in as well, doesn't it?
It does. Well, yeah, it's a completely different beer, a different brewery. So, yeah, I've got crappy new stones and even newer old stones.
I can't even get my head around newer old stones at the minute.
So I'm very, very happy. It was a good little find, although Beth wasn't too happy with the way the day went. And then we got to go and watch Huddersfield start on an undefeated run with a draw.
Is that positive thinking that leads you to not have hangovers?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You need to get involved.
I prefer to just wallow in misery.
Yeah.
I've got to try that concept, just not believing in them, because they get me pretty hard nowadays.
Yeah, just choose not. Choose not to. You'll be fine. You'll be fine.
I've reached a point in life where I can't even mix beer anymore. You know, like different styles and strengths of beer. I can't even do that because that kills me now. I'm relatively all right today because I just stuck to lager last night. Not Europe. It was Left Bank lager, so it was decent. But yeah, I'm rapidly losing my powers.
Oh dear. So is anybody drinking? Talking about drinking and the powers of hangovers in the future.
Yeah, I've got a couple of bottles of Sol. Then I've got a couple of cans of Dillon's Brewery Ghost Town. And I've also got a really nice bottle of Glen Torches, an 18-year-old single malt Speyside Scotch that was a gift from one of our suppliers, and it's absolutely delicious.
Oh, wow. I did actually wonder, should I have some whiskey? Because I know you always come on and have quality whiskey on the show when you're on with us, Tack. But then I thought, I may be pushing it on a school night to not hang up the next morning.
Well, just don't believe in it, Robin. You'll be fine.
Well, it's also about control. Oh, mind you, we said one of your problems the other week, Dan, was that you mixed so many beers. I thought the old adage was, do mix your beers.
Well, if it is, it didn't work for me. That's the bugger there. But now that Tack said it, I'm thinking I've not had a whiskey in a while, and I know I've got a bottle of Cardew Gold Reserve in the cupboard that's been itching to be opened. So if the beers I've got don't work, I might resort to a little tot later on. But I've got, for starters, I've got a couple of bottles of an Adnams beer, which I believe was the brewery near where we were staying when we went to the Willis Lewis wedding.
Yes, in Woodbridge, yeah. We were going to go, but thinking about the massive drive back, we're like, no.
Yeah, I've got Adnams Broadside, which is commemorating the Battle of Sole Bay. It's a strong original ale at 6.3%. First brewed in 1672, apparently.
Oh, very good, very good. Yeah. We should have gone to the... It's a shame we didn't go to the brewery, because it's a hell of a long way to get there.
Yeah, it was. We won't be back there anytime soon, will we?
So I'm starting out on Pensalua Peso, which is a gluten-free session IPA at 5.1%. It says enjoy the ride, so it's all right. So giving it 3.25 on Untappd. We'll see how we go, because this might be a bit of a shorter one, because, as I said at the start of the show, there isn't actually any surviving matches for this period, but there are quite a few that don't exist. So we'll go through those and kind of what happened. But this potentially could be a bit of a shorter episode, but we'll see. We'll see how we get on.
Aye, we will. We will. We've got a couple of bits and pieces to talk about around that, haven't we, as well? Rather than just the sort of the comings and goings on the in the halls and whatnot.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, there was quite a lot going on to celebrate Christmas and the New Year in 1977. So, yeah, we'll definitely come on to that. Although I was going to say, we'll keep that for later, but that's probably going to be in the episode title or whatever. We're going to have Eric Markham popping into the World of Sports Studios. And then we're going to have Kendo Nagasaki unmasking himself because nobody else could do it for him.
Yeah, great stuff. And we've obviously pre-watched that, and I have to confess, one of my favourite things at Christmas is always watching Markham and Wise with my folks. It's just genius. Eric Markham is one of the funniest men that ever lived, so I can't wait to watch that.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. But if we just have a quick jump around and see what was happening at this time, around the halls in November... and all this is coming from Tony Earnshaw's excellent We Shall Not Be Moved, which is, a must-have companion if you're going to be diving into late 70s wrestling. At Solihull, the main event was Big Daddy and Lucky Gordon defeating Giant Haystacks and Rex Strong. So Blackpool's own Rex Strong's back in action.
Yeah, I've not heard of Daddy's tag team partner there.
I think we may actually see him in an upcoming, another series, because we're coming to the end of this series. But yeah. I think we may see him before 1981, so maybe we'll just keep our powder a little bit dry on that one.
All right, cool.
Yeah, and then again, at Hanley Victoria Hall, with Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks facing off in tag team action, where Daddy tagging with Tony St. Clair, who we'll see on the cup final day, and Haystacks is back with Rex Strong again.
Yeah, not too bad. Was that the same Tony St. Clair that we covered on Wrestler?
Yes, it was. Yeah, he had the match against, was it Masahiro Chono?
It was, yeah, it was Chono.
Yeah, yeah.
Big fan of Tony St. Clair. Yeah, he's a proper classic British wrestler. His old man was good as well. Was it his old man or Roy St. Clair? I think was his daddy trained as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a really good, like, classic British wrestler as well. A pair of them wrestled a couple of times as the Saints, and they were absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I think Tony kept hold of his hair a bit better than Roy. Mm-hmm. That was the way.
Yeah.
So Daddy goes on to win that match with a fall on Strong in the ninth round. Then Haystacks get disqualified pretty soon after because he couldn't be bothered working anymore.
Fair enough.
Then over to Bellevue, and there's a six-man tag match, which we haven't really heard that much about in this era.
Sorry to interrupt, but I was just about to ask, how prevalent were six-man tags around that time?
Well, they definitely had them later on. Daddy's last match in World of Sports, the six-man tag, but, I mean, this is the first time I think we've hit one, and we've been, you know, and I've been sort of reading along with the rest of the era going through, so, yeah. But it was Big Daddy, Cat Weasel, the crazy comedy wrestler from Doncaster, and Mike Jordan defeating someone called The Outlaw, Tally Ho K, that was the one with the Fox Hunter gimmick, and Phil Pearson.
Now, I've heard of The Outlaw because Glenn Abbott added me to a group on Facebook, and there's always a lot of debate about how many people actually played The Outlaw, because I believe it was a masked wrestler. And nobody knows for certain exactly how many outlaws there were, just that he popped up absolutely everywhere, and there can't have only been one.
Brilliant.
Gordon Nelson was the main one. That's the earlier one, I think.
I have no idea. I'd just seen it on Facebook, so I thought it's virtually all I can contribute.
Yeah, I know Cat Weasel was a bit of a favourite of both my grandparents, but I also know that it's Colt Cabana's favourite wrestler, weirdly.
Oh, right. Colt Cabana said that Les Kellett was his favourite wrestler.
He did say Les Kellett was on We Watch Wrestling, but I asked him personally if it was really Les Kellett, and he said probably Cat Weasel, actually.
Ah, right, fantastic.
So that makes Colt Cabana a fucking liar.
I didn't tell him that, but I did think it.
Gordon Nelson was the original Outlaw, definitely, so a great knowledge there, Tack. And he worked mostly Morrill Beresford rather than Dale Martin, so he'd have been in the north of England, so... Yeah, given this match was taking place in, was it Crewe? Oh, no, it was Bellevue in Manchester. So, yeah, potentially. It could have been him on the show, or it could have just been someone else taking up the gimmick.
Yeah, I always thought it was a gimmick that kind of got passed around a bit, but not 100%.
Potentially. Up next, in Crewe, there was a tag match. Now, you're going to be gutted about this, Dan. Because we have been waiting for Big Daddy to unleash his double elbow drop on Bruce Hart. But you'll never guess who Big Daddy's skin with.
Bruce Hart,
yeah, yeah. And they took on Kendo Nagasaki and Mark Rocco. Well, actually, they were billed to take on Kendo Nagasaki and Mark Rocco, but Nagasaki failed to appear.
Oh.
So the Outlaw was drafted in to be... the tag team partner, so the Outlaw's back again.
Which one?
Yeah. Although it meant Daddy and Hart won, because they wouldn't have won if Kendo were in the match, would they?
Fair point.
Yeah, so probably helped for the pay window.
Just a wee bit.
Yeah, and then later on in the month, at the Royal Albert Hall,
ooh,
Duke of Kent is in attendance in an event that raised over £5,000 for the Queen's Silver Jubilee appeal. Big Daddy knocks out Sandy Scott with his double elbow.
We're doomed to never see this double elbow.
I know, every match that ITV or whatever or is on on the halls, we don't see it doing this double elbow. And we never does it on... Yeah. One day we'll see it, Dan, one day.
Is that the Canadian Sandy Scott?
So Sandy Scott is from Lanarkshire, and he was married to a wrestler called Busty Keegan, who also wrestled as, I think, Kate Keegan or something like that. But we've seen her in Wrestler in the match against Klondike Kate. Mm. So, yeah.
That was the one I picked, wasn't it?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, good match up.
Yeah, so I think that was the Sandy Scott adjacent link we had on the show.
I sometimes think there was only like about 15 wrestler names to go around in the 70s, and they just sort of picked from the same batch because there's a lot that cross over.
Oh yeah, so it's like Greg Valentine and stuff, isn't it? Is it, you know, the Halifax one, aren't they?
Yeah, because there's a Sandy Scott that I went down a bit of a rabbit hole with him years and years ago, because he did appear in some stuff over here, but he was a Canadian guy. He wrestled like a really good run with like Steve Adonis and a few others.
All right.
And there's loads of his matches on YouTube, and he was a little bit ahead of his time, really. He was pretty decent. But it's not the same guy, so it's irrelevant, really.
Imagine they could have swapped themselves around. It's like the Outlaw, who's working the Sandy Scott gimmick tonight. Yeah.
Join us next time on Unbooking the Scottatory.
So on TV, and in December, the first time that there's a match featuring either Daddy or Haystacks on the Christmas Eve event, Big Daddy teams up with Tony St. Clair to face Giant Haystacks and Detroit Donovan. And the match didn't last very long before Daddy knocked Donovan out with his double elbow, of course.
Fuck's sake.
We're not seeing that, and goes and gets disqualified. But the main thing about this show is that Eric Morecambe had popped into the World of Sports studio.
One of the funniest blokes of all time, as I said before. But just quickly, though, what team? Big Daddy and Tony St. Clair?
Yes, yeah, they were teaming again. So, again, getting ready for the Cup Final Day show.
Yeah, funnily enough, actually, sorry, just a quick sidebar. I've just had a message from my brother. My brother Cameron, saying that he was yesterday watching a tag match of Big Daddy and Marty Jones versus a team called the Krugers. He says he thinks they were. It was from 1987.
Yes. No, I have seen that one. Yeah, so it's good that we're getting... Cam involved. Maybe we'll have to get him in for a Cup Final Day.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do. Making his podcast debut.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic. So what did you think of Eric Markham's appearance on World of Sport?
I thought it was hilarious. We get the typical World of Sport intro. Dickie welcomes us. It's Christmas Eve. He's thanking us for the cards and glad to be part of the day. And Eric Markham just sort of slides into shot and starts apologising for being late and says he was on the last plane. Which just absolutely sent me. And Dickie says, well, sit down then, you know. I was about to tell him about the show, and Eric says he's here for the party, but it's in 2.5 hours. It's an early bird, and does the classic going to sit down, but misses the chair and hits the floor.
Brilliant. I love as well that the chair's like higher up, so because they always had this thing about him working with Ernie Wise, who was shorter than him, so they've made Dickie Davis look a lot shorter.
There's a bit where he says, you're about the same size as Ernie, and he does the double slap the same as he always used to do to Ernie, which I just thought that was genius.
Checks his jacket, doesn't he, and just slaps his chops. Like, yep, same size.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Morecambe and Wise. Like my granddad, as well as him being a big fan of wrestling, he was massively into his comedy. Like he loved like Tommy Cooper and Les Dawson and all the guys of that era. And Morecambe and Wise was his favourite. So like you said earlier, we always watch the Christmas specials every year still. We'll always chuck them on at some point. It's just timeless. His sort of comedy is just... It's never going to be not funny. The guy's just... a ball of comedic chaos in the best possible way. I love him.
Yeah, it mixes everything, doesn't it? It can be a little bit suggestive without being like massively dirty or anything like that, but it's the physical comedy and his facial expressions and everything. It just does everything. When I don't know if it's this bit or it's later on the show, Dickie Davis is saying something about a World Cup event and Eric Markham's lip syncing next to him and getting like increasingly animated. And it's so simple but so funny. And when he's pretending to have his hand stuck in the snooker table corner pocket. And he's there. Dickie's talking and he's trying to look professional, but you can just see his hand like tugging and his shoulder moving as if he's stuck.
The thing is, though, Dickie never lost it properly. Like, you could see it, he was fighting it, but he got his job done. He finished his lines.
Just about, yeah.
Yeah.
When Eric Markham uses his head, Dickie Davis's head as a rest for a snooker shot.
Oh, God, yeah. But he's wearing that visor like a mask or like a bib. And it's so daft. But like you say, he uses the head as a rest, as you said, and he scuffs the brown. I was like, you didn't see that, did you? No, you're fine, you're fine. And then he's blaming the chalk and all of that and shoving the cameraman with the butt of his cue. So bloody funny.
Oh, I mean, it's a classic Markham and Wise bit, but I love it where he gets the empty bag like throws an invisible ball up in the air, yeah. Flicking the back of the bag while Dickie Davis is trying to like go to the next segment.
Yeah. And he has a ridiculously over-the-top reaction at the concept of darts being played in Bermuda. But it's then where he checks if Dickie's hair's a wig.
Yeah.
Then later on, when he leans in and strokes his tash, and he just goes, it's real.
Yeah. Oh, it's brilliant, isn't it?
What's he said, though? He says, like, the last time I saw anything like your top lip, the whole herd had to be destroyed.
Yeah.
And it's when he's at the horse racing as well, and he just walks in with a blue cloth over his face. But behind his glasses, and the presenter, he does lose it. He's not a pro like Dickie Davis. He absolutely corpses.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant, isn't it? Yeah, and it's a shame because, you know, there was wrestling on the episode of World of Sports, so presumably there was a buffer with Eric Markham doing something about the wrestling.
But it's lost to time. And to ITV's vault.
Yeah, which is a real shame, because that would have been brilliant.
Yeah. I'd love them to do something like that now. You know, having just, I don't know, like Soccer Saturday or something like that, and just a comedian comes in to start dicking about, but there's kind of no personalities like that anymore, is there? Not to get all, you know, misty-eyed for the past sort of thing, but
a different kind of comedian that doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the thing as well is that, you know, comedians in those days, they were a jack of all trades, you know, because they used to, you know, do the jokes and do the song and dance and, you know, come up through the music halls and all this sort of stuff. But they'd also had to do like a 20-year apprenticeship before they became famous.
Mm.
Yeah, they all worked their way through like the parks and stuff back in the day, didn't they?
Yeah.
I think, to be honest, modern day, the only person I can think of who's even like in that sort of vein is Johnny Vegas, because he'll turn up and not really have any, like, he doesn't appreciate the ceremony. He'll just turn up and do what he thinks is funny.
Even if
it causes absolute chaos.
Are you thinking about the last leg thing?
Oh, Christ, yeah.
Have you seen
thinking of that, but I am thinking, I'm not going to stop thinking about it now. Doing horrible things to the carp.
Yeah. But that's like the fifth or sixth thing he says.
Yeah.
He just bursts out when they're trying to do the promos, just yelling, I did it, I did it.
He's under a bit of carpet.
It was a bit of a twat, and now he's under some carpet. He used to yell at dogs. when he says, I saw a man catch a carp and put his willy in its mouth, and I told no one. He should have lost his fucking rod license. Boston. you got the other two there who were there over at Josh Widdicombe, and I can't remember the other guy's name. And Adam Hill's just absolutely crying and losing it. Yeah, Johnny Vegas could do that, and he'd be really good at it. Another one that sprung to mind as well, just because of how deadpan he can be with it all, would be with Sean Locke. Yeah. Obviously, sadly, no longer with us, but he'd have, I think he could have done something like that.
He did on occasion, yeah.
Anyway, that's the stand-up comedy portion of the podcast addressed.
So the following week, we are treated to a massive event from Wolverhampton Civic Hall. There is an unmasking ceremony for Kendo Nagasaki. Now, I've seen reports that this segment, and the segment only lasts just over 3 minutes, got 40 million viewers. 14 million viewers. Now, The whole episode of World of Sport would have got less because at this time, the record's less than 10.5 million for the wrestling on ITV. So, you know, just that segment. But, that you know, I guess if that was advertised at a certain time, people, you know, may have turned it on to see that happen and then turn it off. But even so, that's incredible for where we've been with some of these ratings. You know, we were talking in 75 when the ratings slipping down to like 7.5 million or whatever.
It's insane. You know, we keep saying it, but every wrestling company going would kill for that number now.
Oh, yeah.
And that's with a much larger population. Yeah. Sorry, Tech, what were you saying?
I'd say they'd kill for half of that. But yeah. I've said on the show before that my nan's big claim to fame was that she once twatted Kendo Nagasaki with a handbag at a wrestling show at the Pacific Court. But I remember actually when he sent me this segment, I was immediately like, I don't even need to watch it. I mean, I did, but I didn't need to because I used to watch this segment on VHS when I was a kid and over and over again.
Yeah.
I always thought he was going to be a lot meaner looking when I was a kid. And I remember the first time watching it and being terrified of what his face was going to look like. And then being kind of like, oh, he's actually just like a bloke with funny eyes. didn't really spook me as much as I thought he was going to. There was a lot more ceremony than the actual reveal.
I felt the same when Kane unmasked.
Kane looked like a big, big baby that had been rolling around in dust.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been told all these years about, you know, the burns and the disfigurement and the scarring and all of that, and he's just a bloke. I mean, he's not a traditionally handsome bloke, but he's just a dude. At least Kendo had the thing with his eyes. Kane only bothered with one eye.
Yeah.
It's the emotional scarring with Kane, though, isn't it? But I mean, what did you think to the unmasking ceremony as a whole?
If you don't mind me jumping in, because obviously this is my first time watching it, I enjoyed it. It still feels like an event, because I never knew this happened until you sent me the link. I didn't, you know, she didn't realise there was a whole ceremony involved. George Gillette does fantastically well, you know, sort of comparing and leading the whole thing. The acolytes who were there with him really sell the thing, you know, saying that only people who follow Kendo can have the haircut like that, as if anybody else would want to. But yeah, just everything just made it feel huge, even now. And I've seen Peter Thornley, you know, I've seen pictures of him in more recent years, but I don't think I've ever seen him wrestle without his mask on, to my knowledge, unless I've been drunk at your house, Rob.
Well, we did cover the match where Big Daddy gets the mask off briefly.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
You know, we didn't really get a good look at him per se then.
Yeah, but we get George saying that there's, you know, Kendo's been in a secret meditation retreat where he's been learning to build his powers of wrestling and healing, and this is the ultimate fulfillment of that retreat. So they're really selling it as when he unmasks, he's going to be even stronger than before he went away, which is a really good way to frame it. And just sort of stabbing the sword into the ring is really quite dramatic. And, you know, we've got the throwing of the salt and then the blessings and the acolytes kneeling and forming a ring around him. And we get, he bows his head, takes the mask off. We see the tattoo on the top of his head, which is, you know, at first, especially back then, must have been like, oof, he's got a tattoo on his head. That's a bit, you know, that's a bit odd, isn't it? And it's, you know, looked vaguely sort of satanic and whatever. And actually burns the mask in a brazier in the ring. Also, it seemed, I don't know if there was some trickery involved.
Yeah, I thought that was a cool touch. I liked the whole promo that George Gillette did was really good. There's been rumours that he's been injured, but really he's been at a retreat, like meditating and reaching his final form, basically. And that nobody else could beat him to get the privilege, so he gets the privilege himself to take the mask off and stuff. Oh, that was really cool. Really clever way of doing it.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I mean, you know, we've just been saying in the previous couple of months leading up to this that he's no showing events or whatever. So this is explaining it to people. And in a way that there's... I don't know if people who went to see Kendo were disappointed they didn't see him are watching this and going, oh, right, that makes sense now.
I think if he had really been gone injured, which I'm assuming that is actually the case, is that he was injured, is that it's a really good way of just giving it immediate hype as soon as he comes back as well. Like, there's nothing people are going to turn up for more than to see the actual face of Kendo Nagasaki, because at that time it was pretty unbelievable. That was going to happen, and that he was going to do it himself as well, because he went completely unbeaten, right? So
yeah,
and that was all. There was so many times where that mask was on the line and it never happened. So the fact that he was going to unmask himself was a huge, huge deal.
Mm. Yeah, and then when he finally lifts his head after he grabs the sword and he's looking at the camera and his eyes are completely jet black. That looked awesome.
Yeah. And, I mean, we always say, you know, we've got the benefit of watching this sort of stuff on massive HD TVs and whatever, and how well would this have gone over on a 14-inch colour-if-you're-lucky TV? I still think it would have been a massive spectacle.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The fact it looks great on the big TVs makes me think it'd look really good on the smaller ones at the time.
Yeah.
You know, the fact, you know, it's held up for all this time and the upscaling and whatnot. It's a proper moment in wrestling history.
Yeah, definitely. And I know we said we'd left Kendo behind, but we definitely had to dip back in for this just because of how pivotal it was, really, in wrestling history.
You can never really leave Kendo behind.
No, very true, very true. But we can pop over to Cleef Orps for a show.
Wait. Is it the Memorial Hall?
Oh, it's the Pier Pavilion. And Big Dabby is facing Giant Haystacks in a singles match.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ends up no contest after Haystacks cheats, basically, to get an equalising fall in the second round. So, yet another DQ for Haystacks. As much as Kendo wins, Haystacks gets disqualified.
It must have been so frustrating back then watching Haystacks just continually getting disqualified. But what a thing when he finally gets his comeuppance.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. At the Hexagon in Reading, Big Daddy beats Detroit's Donovan by two straight falls.
That's a name that keeps cropping up that I've never heard. Detroit Donovan. Any memories of him, Zach?
Vague memories, but yeah, you know, he's not anyone. He's someone that I've seen pop up here and there, but. Not anyone that I've ever took a ton of notice of, really.
Fair enough.
I really don't know a lot about him. I'd certainly recognise the name, and I've seen him pop up here and there, but he's never one of my guys, for sure. I'm trying to think. There is a match where he's one part of a tag team that is quite good, and I can't put my finger on what it is.
So he does have a TV match with Haystacks against Big Daddy and Tony St. Clair.
That might be the one I'm trying to think of.
Which
one you mentioned before, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, although I think he wrestled as Baron Donovan at some points.
Fair enough.
So, and then we're back to Hanley Victoria Hall on the 30th. There is a tournament. Big Daddy, Giant Haystacks, Tony St. Clair, and Butcher Bond are competing in it. In the semi-finals, Daddy's facing Haystacks. They had an argument over who would be the referee. And in the end, it's decided that St. Clair is going to referee the first round and Bond's going to referee the second round. Sinclair gives Haystack two public warnings before the first bell had rung. Yeah, so he's already trying to get disqualified. And then Bond takes over the officiating duties in round two, giving Daddy a public warning. And then ends up having to disqualify Daddy, and Haystack is the winner. So this is the problem when you let the heels collude.
Shenanigans. Yeah. Absolute shenanigans.
Yep, so there you go. So in the final, Tony St. Clair wins when Haystack walks out after the second round. Yeah, again, back to the pay window. He works by the hour, not by the match. Yeah, so in January on TV, over to Preston on the 28th, and Big Daddy and Giant Haystack again, another tag match. Big Daddy's yet again with Tony St. Clair, and Haystack, we've had him tag him with Hillbilly Albert Hellom before. Tennessee native from Burnley.
Who was that one?
He was called Hillbilly Albert Hellon. He was supposed to be from Tennessee, but he was really from Burnley.
That one rings a bell as well.
I mean, what is Burnley if not the Nashville of Northwest England?
Yeah. So Haystack had a start any time in the ring. Daddy got the first fall on Hellon. And in 4 minutes, and then Tony St. Clair got the winner by pinning Hellon in the second round. So, not much work for Haystack.
Yeah. If Daddy won with a splash, you could say fell on Hellon.
But yeah. But there you go.
Lovely stuff. I enjoyed that.
I'm sorry.
I liked it.
Here's one for you, Dan. In Bradford on the 9th of January on the halls. It says here, and again, this is Tony Earnshaw's words, Giant Haystack and Pat Roach are involved in a blood match, a bloodbath.
Ooh. All right, yeah, I mean, I'm intrigued with that Pat Roach. He was not a small man.
Yeah, he got stopped as a no.
One of my all-time favourites, Pat Roach.
I love how feed the same pet.
Yeah, I absolutely adore him as a wrestler, as an actor. He's just fantastic. On our old podcast, we did an episode on him and like really dug deep into his history and stuff. The dude's story is just unbelievable. Like he was turning up, like he was a proper Hollywood actor at one point. He was in like Indiana Jones movies as a recurring character and stuff like that. He was always the big guy that got dispatched in various weird ways, like aeroplane blades at one point and stuff like that. He was almost like a comedic character, but he was working in a lot of like stunt work, movies, TV, stuff like that. But he was still turning up to like World of Sport recordings and stuff just for a couple of pints. He wasn't even getting properly paid. He just loved wrestling so much that he would show up. They'd stand him up as many beers as he wanted at the bar, which to be fair is probably about 40 pints. But he would just rock up for nothing but some beers and wrestle some really brilliant matches. He was incredible. Really, really good.
Fantastic.
Yeah, he had a really cool finisher, which was like a no-handed suplex.
All right.
Where he'd like put them on his shoulder, and he'd like put his hands to the sides and like flip them over in a suplex, but without holding on to them. It was sort of like a lock of fireman's carry kind of thing, but sort of more vertical. It was really cool. Which he didn't use that regularly, but when he did, it was like a devastating move that would now be an opener, if that.
That does sound amazing.
Yeah, he was awesome. Like, there's not much of his stuff, like not as much of his stuff as you'd like on YouTube, but the stuff that's on there is well worth looking for. Like, he's just a fantastically entertaining wrestler.
No, tomorrow night, rabbit hole.
Yeah, superb. So back to handling it on the 14th, and Daddy's tagging with Bobby Ryan against Haystack and Steve Logan, and Logan goes one up with a submission on Ryan in the fourth, and then there's an equaliser, and then after that, Haystack does his regular disappearing act.
Bored now, I'm off.
Yeah, we've seen a recurring theme here.
Just a bit.
Yeah. Then we get a match between, on the 20th at Blackburn, Big Daddy and Tony St. Clair tagging yet again against Mal King Kong Kirk and Colin Johnson.
Not familiar with Colin Johnson.
So I have just, in the last couple of days, posted the match between Spiros Arian and Colin Johnson, which is reported to, well, some people think it's the most brutal match the world of sport ever televised. Obviously, there's a lot that we don't get. And then Big Daddy comes in and chases off Spiros Arian after the match.
Oh, I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, we'll cover that on the road to Wembley 81.
There's a good, if you want to check out Colin Johnson stuff, he's got a really good, like a bit of a classic match that a lot of people sort of go back to for British wrestling with Burt Royal. They had a bit of a program together at one point, but him and Burt Royal had a couple of good matches. But if you search like Colin Johnson, Burt Royal, it's the first match that comes up on YouTube, I think. And it was, they had like a 28-minute bit of a banger.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a decent wrestler. I don't think he ever went like massive or anything, but he could always put in a good shift, a good ham and egger.
I like a bit of Burt Royal, so.
Yeah,
you're a massive fan of both Royal brothers, aren't you? So
yeah,
enjoyed that.
Yeah, superb. No TV appearance for Daddy R. Haystacks in February, but on the halls. So by this point, Crabtree's taken over the booking for Dale Martin, but there was still some booking that Mike Marino had been doing. So Big Daddy's wrestling for Dale Martin, and is not being sort of billed as the mum's and dad's favourite. So it's still a bit disjointed, but we'll get there to your United front with it. He has a wrestling match with John Elijah, which would have been a barn burner given the match that we reviewed on this run up to Wembley.
Yeah, absolutely. John, I'm going to ask this every time, but John, was it John Elijah with the mad diet?
No, that's John Quinn.
John Quinn, I'm going to get that wrong every single time.
Yeah, until we cover. And that's in the lead-up to the FA Cup final match, right, in 79, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get there.
It's just a lot of food.
Yeah. Big Daddy had a match in Banbury against Bull Schmidt, who was South African and on a tour of the UK. But tour wasn't going well for him because he fell victim to an elbow drop.
I'm sorry. Bull Schmidt.
Yeah, Bull Schmidt. Yeah.
I am saying nothing else.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, back in Bellevue on the 18th, Giant Haystacks is tagging with Mal Kirk against Gil Sting and Ray Steel. I think you said before that's one of your favourite wrestlers, tag.
Yeah, I love Ray Steel, yeah. Yeah, that's one that I wish existed because I'd really like to see that. I really like Ray Steel. He's just one of the absolute classic all-timers. Head of hair like you wouldn't believe. His hair looks like hay. Beautiful.
Yeah, genuinely awesome name as well, Ray Steel. Sorry, I'm talking over there. Genuinely awesome name as well, Ray Steel.
Yeah, he was just he's one of the guys that a lot of like the modern guys still use a lot of his stuff. Like he was a bit of an innovator. I don't think he gets a lot of love for that, but yeah, pretty incredible. He had some amazing stuff with Leon Harris amongst others.
Awesome.
Well, it obviously upset Haystacks because he stayed for the duration to get a big splash to win the match.
Quite a rarity at this point, isn't it?
He hadn't gone home already. Beat the traffic. Yeah. On the 23rd at Digbeth, Giant Haystacks and Mal Kirk are facing Daddy and Tony St. Clair.
Making a habit of this, aren't they?
Yeah, Haystacks does his usual disappearing act.
Was he of all these times? Was he actually just like fucking off halfway through the match, or did he just?
So Mal Kirk was left to face the two of them on his own, and
there are matches on YouTube where he's done that, so I assume that is the case. But I didn't know if that was like every time he is literally just sodding off.
Yeah, just leaving his partner.
Yeah,
and the thing is, these partners keep tagging with him again.
Yeah, they're not learning, are they? At a certain point, it's on them.
Yeah.
I think it was George Bush who said, "Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, don't get fooled again."
Yeah.
Something like that.
Oh, dear. They probably don't learn because they keep getting double elbow dropped.
Yeah.
So at the Royal Albert Hall on the 15th, it's the start of the Big Daddy Will She Not Be Moved era. So he's got his music now.
Hey, great stuff.
Yeah. On the 15th of March, Big Daddy's teaming with the Dynamite Kid.
Hey, the name I recognise.
Yeah, you're getting into it now, Dan. And that's against Giant Haystacks and Malkin Conkirk, who hasn't learnt his lesson from before.
Can I guess, does Haystacks fuck off at any point?
Well, we don't actually have the result of this match, so I don't know, but I'm guessing everyone, you probably did fuck off. Yeah, everyone fucked off, yeah.
You from him.
Just said before, it's Teletext TV, booked it, packed it, fucked off.
I'll tell you what, hearing all of these matches, it does make me sad that they don't exist for me to watch.
Yeah, there's so much World of Sport missing. So much. Another match that's missing from March 1978 from Nottingham. Big Daddy took on Mal King Kong Kirk, and they spent most of the time arguing rather than wrestling. At one stage, Mal Kirk left the ring on advice from Giant Haystacks.
Brilliant. A super heavyweight argument.
Yeah, but he got back in the ring and Daddy won with a big splash.
Of course he does.
Yeah. That was like he gave him a tip, like, you know, you can just fuck off. They still pay you.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Oh, John, sound. See you later.
Yeah.
Imagine if that was an option in every job.
Just you wait. We will come on to something that's unbelievable about getting paid for not doing anything. So on the halls at Bellevue on the 4th, Big Daddy and Tony St. Clair were tagging together, and it was a match against Giant Haystacks and Malkin Conkirk, who hasn't learnt again, but the match goes its duration, albeit Haystacks getting disqualified in the 7th minute.
They must have like block-booked Malkin Conkirk. It's the only way it makes any sense. They've given him a lump sum and said, we need you to have this many tag matches with Giant Haystacks. He might fuck off, but
he regretted it after the first one, but he had to keep coming back.
He signed a contract. What can you do? Yeah. Man of his word.
With the DQs, does it at any point say like what he was DQ'd for? Or is it just DQ? That's it. I'm assuming it's just rule violations, and he's just getting public warnings and out. It doesn't really say like specifically what he's done.
No, we don't get that much information, unfortunately, but. Yeah, it seems to be a recurring theme. And you'll never guess what match happened on the 6th of the month at Bradford. It's a repeat of the same.
Would it be Big Daddy and I'm guessing probably Tony St. Clair against Giant Haystacks and Mal King Conkirk, who's coming to halfway through his contracted tag bout?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Although Haystacks gets disqualified and Tony St. Clair gets waylaid. So it ends up becoming a singles match between Daddy and Malkin Conkirk, but doesn't last very long and Daddy's the winner.
So Malkirk's not quite got the hang of fucking off, but he's got the hang of laying down.
Yeah, yeah. Pay me sort of thing. But there would have been a lot of money going around because on the 15th, it's a sellout of the Royal Albert Hall. And Big Daddy is tagging with Dynamite Kid against Giant Haystacks and guess who?
Malkin Conkirk.
Yeah, exactly. So Haystacks makes Dynamite submit, then Daddy gets an equaliser. Dynamite Kid is giving Kirk a torrid time with his speed and skillful moves.
It sounds about right. There was actually sort of 15 minutes of World of Sport on last week on ITV4. Managed to record it, and it's the earliest I've ever seen Davey Boy Smith wrestle. He looked about 18, and he was just so tall and so thin. It was bizarre.
Yeah, he don't look like the same person, does he, in them early matches?
No, yeah, not young, at all.
Yeah.
Young David, that was it, yeah.
Yeah. Now, we're over to Hanley. Giant Haystacks is yet again tagging with Malkin Conkirk.
Fucking hell.
Against Pat Roach and Gwyn Davies.
Oh, all right.
Been for a while.
That's a team.
That was so good as well.
Yeah.
What attack?
That must have been a brilliant match. It's just, again, a shame that you can't actually watch it. There's a really good Gwyn Davies and Dennis Mitchell match. It's in two parts on YouTube that I watch relatively regularly, and it's really good. So I really like Gwyn Davies. He had a lot of stuff with Haystacks as well, like lots of matches over the years.
Yeah, well, Haystacks does his boob smother to Davies.
The motorboat of death.
Yeah. Haystacks manages to get himself disqualified before the bell, leaving Kirk to wrestle on his own. Ends up becoming a no contest.
He's getting shorter and shorter days of work, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he had to get over to Cleethorpes the next night. Stanley to Cleethorpes isn't quick. He had to miss the traffic. Yeah, and a handicap match between Bradford's own Alan Dennison and favourite of the show, Honey Boy Zimba.
Very nice. Yeah. I'll have some of that.
Yeah, Zimba was flattened by a big splash.
Literally.
Yeah. Yeah. On the 21st at Croydon, Big Daddy's All-Star team took on a team captained by Mike Rollerball Rocco. So in a singles match, Kung Fu beat Cyanide Sid Cooper.
Nice.
Cool. Royal defeated Mark Rocco. And also Bobby Barnes was disqualified in a match against Vic Faulkner. And then in the final, Big Daddy knocked out The Mask.
So Jim Carrey?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jim Carrey's got wrestling experience, hasn't he? With
playing Andy Kaufman, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That movie makes me angry, man.
I've never seen it.
I hate it. Have you heard the story about him, about Jim Carrey dealing with Jerry Lawler?
Yes,
Lawler was saying, like, does he know that me and Andy Kaufman were friends? It was all, like, his pro wrestling. We weren't that, like, because Jim Carrey was really shitty with him all the time because he thought they were actually enemies. And he was like, he's one of my best friends. We used to write sketches together and we wrote all the wrestling stuff together. And Jim Carrey was just really shitty with Jerry Lawler the whole time.
I mean, if you're going to pick somebody in wrestling to be shitty to, Jerry Lawler's a good place to start.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I just thought it was a bit odd.
Yeah, but, you know, Lawler deserves it.
Yeah.
Not going to fault Jim Carrey for that one.
Yeah.
Yep, so then we're over to North London for another Team Big Daddy TV All-Stars versus a team of heels. They've got the Mega Slam booking here, haven't they?
Is it Team Nasty?
Yeah, yeah. Team Daddy won 6-0 against Giant Haystacks' team.
That's like that WCW New Japan show they put on in the early 90s. Where it was supposed to be, where they're all facing off, and I think they called it a World Cup, even though it was the USA versus Japan. And WCW just steamrolled.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Exactly.
Yeah. Over to Central London. Giant Haystacks, King Kong Kirk, and Butcher Bond are in the team, in a tournament with Big Daddy. First round, Bond beats Haystacks, who was disqualified, obviously.
Yeah,
Daddy beats Mal King Kong Kirk in the semi-finals, and the finals a non-event. Butcher Bond's unable to wrestle, so Big Daddy wins.
Fucking hell! What a shit way to win a tournament.
Yeah, we're actually at Blackpool at the Tamworth Circus. Giant Haystacks is taking on Tony St. Clair. You'll never guess what happened in the match.
Disqualified.
Now, you will love this. Dale Martin, at this point in 1978, negotiates with the venues that they're going to that they're guaranteed £300 for every show, even if they don't turn up.
What? So the venues are paying him a down payment on a show that may or may not happen.
Well, so Dale Martin was a promotion, so, you know, like
Leicester. You know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. So if the show can't go ahead for any reason at all, including them not turning up, they're getting £300.
What a grift.
Yeah, well, that's how popular wrestling was.
They thought it was worth chucking 300 quid on the possibility of wrestling happening.
Mm. Yeah.
Fucking that's unreal.
Serious carny shit right there, isn't it?
Yeah.
God, you're laughing all the way to the bank, aren't you?
Just while we're like running through all these results, I'm starting to think that Giant Haystacks was part turtle, and if he ever like fell on his back, he'd never be able to get up again. Should probably be about times he's like walked out, got DQ'd.
Let's have a giant spatula to turn him over.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because it's very Scott Steiner, Madeja style. In April on TV, there's a handicap match. Giant Haystacks takes on Sandy Scott and Lucky Gordon at the same time. Sandy Scott gets flattened first, so I'm imagining Busty Keegan scraping him off the mat. From Sakura style. And then Gordon gets another one a couple of minutes later.
Brilliant. Oh, dear.
Another three-a-side team six-man tag match on the 15th on TV from Blackburn. Okay. Big Daddy, Kung Fu, and Kid Chocolate, otherwise known as Alan Badwell. Well, it certainly relocated to Bradford, so that's another Bradford zone.
Bradford, the home of British wrestling, as christened by UTT.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, Big Daddy trained in Bradford, Alan Badwell lived in Bradford, and Kung Fu's from Belfast. And they're facing a Mick McManus team, and he has on his side Tony Walsh. So he's going to go running off to the mirror when he loses. And Tally Ho Kay.
Fair enough. Strong team.
Yeah, yeah. And Team McManus went 2-0 up when Tally Ho Kay forced Alan Badwell to submit. And then Daddy got the final win when he pinned Tony Banger Walsh, who always lost to Big Daddy.
Oh, it's not the worst thing in the world, though, is it being booked to lose against Daddy?
No, well, you're probably going to be getting a decent payday. Later in the month from Nottingham on TV, Lee Bronson faced Giant Haystacks. He manages to knock him over with a cross press for a pinfall, but then he gets flattened with a squash. Yeah, it doesn't go much further for Bronson than that, but it was.
So Haystacks didn't... So Haystacks didn't walk out of the one he went 1-0 down in?
No, no.
Funny thing that.
Yeah, just couldn't continue. Around the halls that month, at Bellevue, Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks are there as part of a 2-versus-3 tag team. Daddy's there tagging with Kung Fu against Matt Rocco and Tony Walsh and Tally Ho Kay. And,
right.
Well, yeah, Walsh gets... knocked out with a double elbow drop.
Fuck's sake.
Yeah. And then Haystacks is in a tournament alongside Zebra Kid. I don't think it can possibly be that one.
No one would have thought
so. Is that the Roy Knight Zebra Kid?
No, it was a wrestler called George Bolas. He was a wrestler from the 60s from Manchester.
I didn't think Roy Knight was that old. He's not.
No, he's not. No.
Especially not considering Roy Knight. I'm pretty sure Roy Knight was supposed to have a match recently. I don't know. I'm getting confused. Sorry, I'm thinking of the dad Ricky Knight.
Yeah.
Yeah, Roy Knight's definitely not old.
Yeah, that was when he said Zebra Kid. That was what jumped into my head for some reason.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, yet again, not enough names in British wrestling.
Yeah. They got to the back of the three-page book and they had to start again.
Yeah. So I wonder they don't just all have names starting with A.
Yeah. Arne Anderson had the right idea.
Yeah, front of the phone book, Arne Anderson. First wrestling call.
Oh, that should have been his nickname. Front of the phone book, Arne Anderson.
In the tournament as well was Bronco Wells, and you always get really excited when you hear about BoJack Rawlins.
Yeah, because it makes me think of BoJack Horseman.
Yeah. Haystacks got himself disqualified in his match against BoJack. The Zebra Kid ends up winning the tournament.
At least that tournament had a conclusion.
Yeah, yeah, that's... That's fair enough. And a show at Croydon. Tag team match was advertised, Big Daddy and Tony St. Clair.
I reckon Tony St. Clair signed the same deal as Mal King Kong Kirk. He just got the better of it.
Yeah. It ends up being, they're supposed to be against Matt Marino and Wayne Bridges, but it's Giant Haystacks and Bruiser Murr that they end up facing, and disqualification in the ninth round.
Took a while then.
Yeah. So there's mention here that now that Crabtree's took over the booking for the whole country, we're getting a lot more northern wrestlers going south for the likes of Haystacks, Rocco, the Royals, Kung Fu, Dynamite Kid, etc. are getting booked in Dale Martin a lot more.
Showcasing the northern talent, nothing against that.
Yeah. And in Chester, Ladder Man, Big Dabby and Giant Haystacks.
Fuck off, why do they need a ladder?
Dabby climbed the ladder.
No, he didn't.
To grab the money. Yeah, Dabby won a ladder match. But if you want to see it again, you go to Wolverhampton where they replayed the match. But the ladder was not up to scratch.
God.
When Haystacks broke the ladder.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And it took them decades for wrestling to figure out you needed to reinforce with the guys that big.
Yeah, so it descended into a tag match with Dabby and Mike Marino versus Giant Haystacks and the Viking.
Oh, the Viking. Who was that then? Do you know? Is there anything on that, or is that another live Googling situation that I shouldn't have asked about?
It does make you wonder why they didn't have more than one ladder.
So the Viking was a wrestler called Tony Wood, who was pretending to be Swedish, obviously.
Yeah, naturally.
Yeah, he actually went on to become a stock car racer after his time in wrestling.
Of course he did. That's a perfectly natural career progression.
Yeah. Yeah, so not too much in wrestling there, but there you go.
I'm just thinking if Vince McMahon ever heard that would, you know, in the 90s, that would be his gimmick. It'd be the original Sparky Plug.
Yeah, it would have been Sparky Plug, wouldn't it? Yeah, yeah. There you go. So, yeah, we would be up next to the Cup Final Day match, but... Before we do that, we'll scour the local papers and see if there's any news going on about wrestling or anything at the time.
I did try and Google the Viking just then, but all I got was Ivar from the Viking Raiders and Edge when he was in Vikings.
Oh, he was good in that.
Yeah.
Doing my best Cy Powell impression. I ain't seen that.
No. So I'm going to pop over to the Bristol Evening Post from April the 21st of 1978, because there's an advertisement for a wrestling show here. It's a head-shaving challenge, Cyanide Sid Cooper versus Max Ward.
Max Ward? Wasn't he a referee?
He was a referee, yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, tickets between £1.20 and £50.
Oof, I'd spring for front row.
Yeah. I mean, Sid Cooper did rock around with short hair, so he may well have lost.
Spoiler alert, Jesus.
Yeah. So, but since we're in the papers, we might as well flip over to the job section for the Dan Does the Job section of the show.
Oh, here we go.
Let's get him employed.
Well, you're here too, Tack, so, you know, we can both go for a job from the 1970s. See if you can get a new vocation.
Yeah, you don't get off that easily, Tack.
And so the 1970s was an absolute minefield for employment law. So they didn't respect protected characteristics. So if you're the wrong gender for the role, the wrong age, you've got the wrong marital status, then you won't get it. Now, obviously, we know that Dan and Tack are qualified for any job they might choose to go for. But if they don't meet any of those criteria, then they can't have the job. The other thing is, once they've passed on the job, they can't go back and they can't get the same job. So if we get down to the fourth job without either of you accepting one of these or applying for one of these jobs, then there's going to be some fighting out over who gets which of the last two.
Aye, neither of us want to be on the breadline.
Yeah.
So the first job, a masseuse is urgently required. Services. Experience is completely unnecessary.
I think I'll pass on that one.
it's a gamble, isn't it? It depends who you're masseusing. But yeah, I feel like I should pass on that one as well.
I feel like they'd be very gender specific on that one.
Yeah.
It also doesn't sound particularly legitimate.
No, it doesn't, does it? No. It
sounds very much like the oldest profession.
Was masseuse in quotes?
It's just the way that they're urgently required for visiting services and experiences completely unnecessary.
How urgent could a need for a masseuse possibly be?
For an unqualified masseuse.
Yeah, if you've got cramp, you don't chuck it in the paper and wait for a reply, do you? You need it quicker than that.
Yeah. So part-time sales assistants are required. 3 days a week to include Saturdays. Experience of selling curtains is preferred but not essential.
That is wildly specific.
Excellent working conditions with 4 weeks holiday after 12 months service. You get a top salary and commission is paid.
Ooh.
I still don't want to work in sales. I say that every time. I'm not bothered. I'm not in for sales.
This is from that era where, like, there was a shop for everything. Not like nowadays where you can go to Tesco's and just buy every single thing you need. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'd be a good curtain salesman, but I'm going to pass because I've got a feeling there's going to be some more of my speed coming up.
Okay. A residential housekeeper is required for a large house in a residential area. Catering for approximately 18 engineering students.
Oof.
Not a pass.
Are we going to fight out from the last job?
It sounds like it, doesn't it? I should have gone for the curtains, man.
Curtains. It could be curtains.
I don't want to work. I don't want to be housekeeper for students.
Superb. So the fourth job. Ace Taxis is requiring taxi drivers. Trainers, training will be given. Imagine if trainers were given, that'd be awesome.
Well, I can tech that because I've got my driver's license.
Yeah, I don't drive.
Oh, yes. So I get it.
Superb. So the fifth job, the final job, which you're going to have to...
You said there was only four jobs.
No, there's five jobs. No, I said if you get to the fourth one, each of you are going to have to...
Right. Well, I'm happy with taxi driver anyway.
Yeah. So the fifth and final job, so you're going to have to apply for this one, Tank.
Oh, I should have talked to curtain salesman.
Do you have a desire to enter the world of modelling?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Tax, perfect.
If so, I'd like to meet you.
and if you're an unqualified masseuse, more the better.
Yeah, and it does say that they're a licensed modelling agency, yeah. So is it better than that unlicensed masseusing?
Yeah. If this interview takes place on a black leather couch, I'm going to be very upset. I'm going to have to take the job.
I think the masseusing one definitely will take place on a black leather couch. There were no age, gender, whatever requirements for that, so you could have had that job if you'd so desired.
What, for the masseuse?
Yeah. For the sales assistant, that was selling curtains, to be fair, but there were no requirements for that, so you could have had that job.
Oh, tack.
The residential housekeeper, they were looking for a married person in their mid-40s.
That'd have been me fucked.
I got half of that.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm married, I'm not mid-40s.
Ace Taxis. We're looking for someone aged 25 or over.
Yes, I mean.
You're in. You've got a job. Got a job. And there are no age or gender requirements for being a model, Tack.
None at all.
None at all?
The progressive 70s, I'm in.
Well, I mean, it might be difficult when you get to the interview.
I'll pack myself into whatever they've got to get me into. £10 of shit in a £5 bag can't look that bad.
Oh, it's a fun game, that. I like it.
I like that.
Superb. Well, the only thing to do now is to head on to the 1978 FA Cup final, which we'll do next time. But in the meantime, where can people find you, Tack?
I'm at Tack Brown on Twitter, or X, or whatever it's called now. That's Tack with two C's, because I'm different like that.
christened the Undertaker.
Yeah, the Undertaker.
As I'm going to point out every time.
If you're in Coventry, come to my pub, but leave it till January, eh? It's the town crier. But don't come in till January. We're really busy for December.
The only time you hear you turning away trade. Now you can find me on Twitter at DanGriffin21, usually tweeting about wrestling that's a minimum 6 weeks out of date, or movies that are 25 years out of date. If you want to hear me more of me talking about stuff, I'm over on SJP World Media with the Doctor Who pod with Si Pal, where we talk about Doctor Who, one episode or serial per Doctor per season, and doing alternative Premier League commentary with my strike partners on the volley. That's with the magnificent Matt Lewis and Connor from Connor Knows Footy.
Excellent, yeah. If you should get over there. There's some really quality content, so you're really knocking it out of the park.
It's how much, really?
You can follow me at UTT Rob. It's really more about the mutuals than it is about the followers, so I'm absolutely more than happy to follow back on the same podcast channel as this. If you go back in the archives, you can hear the One Man's Meat podcast with Danny at Scottish Juggler and the real Chris Bellis going through the forgotten storylines of wrestling, wrestlers, and I give them much love, that kind of thing. They're on a bit of a hiatus at the moment, but as I say, they have some excellent back content. In terms of other side projects that we have, we recently finished unbooking the Tankatory, where we went through the life and times of legitimately the hardest man that ever lived, one David Tank Abbott. And if you go to the Twitter for that, at UTT Tank, you can get some hashtag tank facts.
Because we refuse to let them die.
Exactly. Such as, if you manage to spell out Tank Abbott during a game of Scrabble, you instantly win the game.
It was the first rule that they wrote.
Yeah. If you go onto the Waddington's website or whatever, whoever came up with Scrabble, yeah. There's a picture of Tank Abbott looking disapproving.
The only two words he cares about are pay window.
Yeah. Tank Abbott never used to draw in art class because Tank Abbott always wins.
Yep, that's very true.
And Tank Abbott eats gummy bears and shits out grizzly bears.
I like that one.
I've heard that before and I can't hold it together every time.
You can follow the main show at Unbooking the Territory. Yeah, we're currently looking at the first and last of wrestling, so debuts, finales, that kind of thing. And I think at the time of recording, we're a little bit of hiatus with that, but if we're not there, we'll be back soon. But we do have quite a big archive that you can go back to and listen to there.
Yeah, just one or two episodes, eh?
Yeah, just one or two. So next time, as I say, we're going to the show that went out on FA Cup final day in 1978. Big Daddy and Tony St. Clair tagging yet again against Giant Haystacks. And Bruiser Muir this time is kicked Malkin Conkirk to the curb for the build-up to the Ipswich Town Arsenal game. So we'll have
He didn't kick him to the curb. His contract was up.
Yeah, he's clocked on. He's kicked his to the curb, yeah. So
it's going to be great to get into that, and I can't wait to have you along with us for the ride, Tack.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Really excited for that. As long as I don't have to know much about football, the football side.
I'm doubly useless next week. I don't know anything about the football back then. I don't know anything about the wrestling either.
I've got the wrestling covered. I'll be all right on that part.
Yeah, we'll be absolutely fine. But there was one thing that Malkin Conker needed to get through his tag teaming with Giant Haystacks, and that was positive thinking. So we'll end the show on Markham and Wise singing positive thinking.
Brilliant.
Beautiful.
Thank you for listening.
When you feel down, try positive thinking. That's what I told the man, said don't wear a frown, try positive thinking, laugh at your troubles instead. You've got to look on the bright side, on hope so much depends. With your confidence sinking, positive thinking helps you on the way, my friend. When things look black, try positive thinking. Treat every season as spring, no glancing back, try positive thinking. Trust what tomorrow may bring. This crazy world that we live in will keep on spinning round, but with good, strong, positive thinking, we'll get together and life won't let us down. When you feel down, try positive thinking. That's what I told the man, said, don't wear a frown, try positive thinking, laugh at your troubles instead. You've gotta look on the bright side, on hope so much depends. With your confidence sinking, positive thinking helps you on the way, my friend. When things look black, try positive thinking. Treat every season as spring, no glancing back. Try positive thinking, trust what tomorrow may bring. This crazy world, what we live in, will keep on spinning round. But with good, strong, positive thinking, good, strong, positive thinking, good, strong, positive drinking, we'll get together and life won't let us die. I wish I could sing like that, don't you?
Yeah.